everyone. Welcome to Room Now. This podcast is sponsored by AbbVie, U.S. Medical Affairs, and Health Impact. My name is Christina Charles Showman. I'm at UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles. I'm so glad to be back on Room Now. We have a follow-up episode to our March 2025 discussion on treatment goals for RA, this time with some recent data from the Select Switch clinical trial to add to the conversation. Joining me again is Dr. Jane, and I will let Dr. Jane introduce himself.
Yeah, great to be back. Thanks for having me. My name is Manish Jane. I am a private practice rheumatologist here on the north side of Chicago. I'm practicing rheumatology within my practice setting, which is Ravenswood Rheumatology. I also serve as a principal investigator for Flourish Research and have done clinical trials both inside and outside of rheumatology.
Awesome. Thanks, Dr. Jane. So before we get into the recent data, I wanted to briefly recap some of the key points from the last episode that we did. At that time, we really focused on the importance of timely disease control, how uncontrolled disease can impact a wide range of patient outcomes, including cardiovascular risk, which I think many of us are very familiar with at this point, but also other outcomes, things that we wouldn't think of, like infection risk, really the impact of uncontrolled disease.
Yeah, it's really critical for patients to understand long-term consequences of rheumatoid arthritis inside the joints, but I think also really importantly outside the joints. You know, in my clinical practice, I really focus on rheumatoid arthritis and tight control of the disease. It's all about playing the long game. I have a lot of stoic patients in my practice, and you know, I'll tell them, you know, I care about your pain. I care about your symptoms, right? But we're playing the long game and really working to mitigate that longitudinal risk.
Yeah, that's huge. The clock is kind of ticking, so to speak, with these patients. So we have to have that goal of really getting to an early remission as much as we can. In the last episode, we talked about a study, and I think the data in this area is really building. But that study we talked about found that the longer the patient experiences active disease, the less likely they are going to achieve remission in the future. So I think, you know, data speaks, and bringing the data into the clinic also helps me when I'm trying to counsel the patients to tell them about different studies that come out. Not everybody wants to hear that, but some of them really take an interest in it, and it makes an impact. I think we want to give our patients the best chance of success. And so we spend less time on a treatment that isn't working and really walk them through how it is perhaps particularly important to be able to transition sooner to a treatment that is going to work and get them closer to remission, if not in remission. And that brings us to the discussion that we're going to have is how do we kind of guide our patients to that treatment decision as a clinician? We know, at least in the U.S., that most patients begin advanced therapy with a TNF inhibitor, but we also know that many of those patients do not achieve disease control with an initial TNF inhibitor, and they require subsequent treatment. So I think monitoring disease activity is critical, and then being prepared really to discuss what's next at that next visit is really important.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's also important to note every patient is going to arrive at that treatment decision, you know, perhaps in a slightly different route, a slightly different way. As an example, some patients never achieve disease control from that first TNF inhibitor, right? I think we generally consider those primary non-responders, while others achieve control within 3 to 6 months of starting therapy. But, you know, over time, the love affair is lost, right? That secondary non-responder. And the pathway to non-response may give us some idea about why the TNF inhibitor may not be working for that individual patient. We then have to take all that information about the patient's treatment history, their comorbidities, lifestyle, and then come to a shared decision. Use a second TNF inhibitor or switch to a different therapeutic mechanism of action or MOA. And so today we're going to get into some recent data that helps support that treatment decision. But before we get there, let's think through some of the guidelines and data that we discussed in the last episode. Following a first TNF inhibitor failure, ACR guidelines conditionally recommend switching MOAs over using a second TNF inhibitor, whereas EULAR recommends either option. While these guidelines were based on the evidence that was available at the time, there were really limited randomized controlled trial data that helped compare those two options. I mentioned it last year, I'm going to mention it again here in 2026. There's so much value in randomized clinical trial data that I can directly translate into my clinic. And I really am fond of bringing data into the conversations I'm having directly with my patients.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. Data speaks. So I'm excited. We have, a recent randomized control trial that we're going to discuss called Select Switch, which I was really happy to work on as a co-author. It is the first randomized controlled trial to assess switching to a JAK inhibitor versus using a second TNF inhibitor after that first TNF inhibitor failure. So this study aims to inform our clinical decisions by directly assessing what the optimal treatment sequence may be after TNF inhibitor failure in a head-to-head trial.
Upadacitinib is a Janus kinase JAK inhibitor indicated for the treatment of adults with moderately to severely active rheumatoid arthritis, RA, who have had an inadequate response or intolerance to one or more tumor necrosis factor, TNF blockers. Limitations of use for RA. Upadacitinib is not recommended for use in combination with other JAK inhibitors, biologic disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, BD-MARDs, or with potent immunosuppressants, such as azathioprine and cyclosporin. Adalimumab is a TNF blocker indicated for reducing signs and symptoms, inducing major clinical response, inhibiting the progression of structural damage, and improving physical function in adults with moderately to severely active RA.
So in Select Switch, nearly 500 adults with moderate to severe RA who had an inadequate response or intolerance to a single TNF inhibitor were randomized to either upadacitinib or adalimumab, along with methotrexate as background therapy for 12 weeks. At week 12, we found that upadacitinib was superior to adalimumab in achieving low disease activity, which was the primary endpoint, and remission, which was a ranked secondary endpoint, based on DAS28 CRP. Upadacitinib also had higher rates of CDI low disease activity, which was a pre-specified non-ranked endpoint. Upadacitinib was superior to adalimumab in achievement of ACR 50, and it also reduced patient-reported pain. These were ranked secondary endpoints. And I don't know about you, Dr. Jane, but pain is the number one in terms of what folks are talking about. So this data, like I said before, I'm going to say it again, it speaks. There's certainly, if you're interested, those of you listening to this podcast, you can look at the latest RheumNow RX update, and you can look at the data itself more. Dr. Jane, excited to hear your thoughts on this and if it's going to impact your clinical decision making.
Yeah, quite a bit, right? I mean, we had a conditional recommendation before to switch MOA, and I feel myself like over, especially the last few years, just kind of starting to migrate towards that conditional recommendation. I think a lot of that was based on, some of the data that we had available, obviously not a randomized controlled trial to help answer this specific question and powered to really evaluate superiority of the MOA switch as compared to sticking with the second TNF. A lot of it's just like gestalt, right? I call it like my mental Rolodex. I'm 14 years in practice, right? And just kind of thinking through, it's like, I had that patient with an epic first run, perhaps on a TNF inhibitor or maybe a non-response to a TNF inhibitor. As I'm cycling through TNFs, my mental Rolodex, well, how successful am I really being by doing that cycling? And yeah, my mental Rolodex is kind of like aligning with, not that successful. I think this data really helped solidify it. We have the data. And so I'd say this is really revelatory for my clinical practice that I can really bring this into the clinic room and really kind of have concrete data to help drive that decision making.
Yeah, 100%. And I think every patient is different, but I think just bringing that data and then just letting it sit for a minute. And it's so interesting to have the reaction of one patient versus another and how they respond to it. And I think it really helps because right now, to this point, we haven't had the ability to have a head-to-head trial to say which drug next. We still offer, you know, the options, but I think this helps us in bringing the conversation forward. So you had mentioned earlier the importance of the type of TNF failure in choosing subsequent treatment. There's a post hoc analysis of Select Switch presented at ELAR 2026. Interesting, numerically higher rates of DAS28-CRP, low disease activity, and remission in both the primary as well as secondary non-responders. And now certainly additional studies needed to validate these observations. The post hoc data was not controlled for multiplicity. The treatment differences could represent chance findings. Certainly the data is interesting. How does that data shape your thinking in clinic?
Yeah, a couple interesting ways, right? So first of all, am I shocked by both primary and secondary non-responders having numerically higher rates with upadacitinib as compared to adalimumab? I'm not surprised, right? Because we had that initial endpoint data cut just showing, right? Nearly two times the higher response in that upadacitinib treated group as compared to adalimumab. So, right, it'd be hard to think of a single subset, right, be able to drive such a robust difference in those primary and secondary endpoints. I think it also, if you ask me a year or two or 5 years ago, you know, how much do I care about this distinction between primary and secondary non-responders? I probably used to care about it quite a bit. I'm much more interested in cycling in a patient where the first TNF was a secondary non-response. But as my clinical experience has grown, right, and my mental Rolodex of those patients has kind of gotten higher and higher, it's like, well, how much better did my patient really do on that second TNF? I now have data, right, to really help me understand that even in the secondary non-responders, the switching of the MOA was the winner.
Yeah, it's remarkable when you hit a mechanism of action that works. I had a drummer years ago. He had outright failed a TNF inhibitor, no response. And his life was playing the drums. He played internationally all over the world. And a rheumatologist had told him he had to change careers, and he quickly sought out a new rheumatologist, you know? And I mean, within a few weeks of starting a JAK inhibitor, he was drumming again. And I think that's the coolest thing we could do as rheumatologists. We can be the rock stars, so to speak, and make patients better. But I think you have to be willing to admit defeat. And one day we'll understand better why certain patients respond to one drug versus another. I think that personalized medicine, we're just scratching the surface of that. And that's going to be a really exciting time. But I think for now, we have opportunities to move that needle, so to speak, in tremendous ways. We just have to kind of take the data and move forward.
Concept I find myself focusing on is, well, how good is good enough?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe you have someone, right, that is feeling better, and doc, why? But I'm better, doc. But helping ground that patient, I know you're better, but you're not good enough. And, you know, as we play the long game, I have to get you really, really good. And if I can get you well, that's going to pay dividends over the years with your care.
Some patients are just, they're scared. And I think they're scared of changing to a drug that they don't know how the safety is going to pan out. I think as our data banks build over time with the years and years experience that we have with these drugs, I think it helps us, and informing our patients with that data really helps them get there. I think what it is going to come down to is safety, right? And that is the next topic in the conversation that always is coming up with the patient. I think what we've seen so far in Select Switch is that the safety is consistent. There's nothing new that we found so far. All adverse events of special interest at week 12, including malignancy and serious infection, occurred at a frequency of less than 3% across both treatment arms, with no reports of MACE, VTE, or GI perforations. Now, that's week 12, right? Certainly, we have to wait for further data to come out to week 48. And certainly, we know that whatever adverse reaction rates that we see in clinical trials really may not be predictive of what happens in our clinical practice. Those are select patients, and that's something we always have to keep in mind. Period 2 data, I'm excited to see it through week 48 is coming. We'll have it.
Yeah. And so, right, we have this early safety data. We'll wait with bated breath for that week 48 data. I always kind of keep coming back to, I'm concerned about the consequences of uncontrolled RA and side effects. It's not just thinking about efficacy, but actually thinking about safety in that patient over time.
Please continue listening for more detailed information on upadacitinib and adalimumab safety considerations, including boxed warnings.
But I think, you know, one day at a time, as the data comes out, I think it really helps us in practice to counsel patients, because at the end of the day, it's that individual, and giving them as much information as you can is what's going to get you there in terms of their best outcome.
Absolutely. So I think this is a great opportunity to really, you know, right, think about select switch within the broader select RA program, right? We mentioned a couple times, we've got that data through week 12, but just a lot of other data across the breadth of the entire phase 3 program. That full picture of the upadacitinib phase 3 studies, I had the pleasure of enrolling my patients into a couple of them. Actually, these were some of the first clinical trials I did as a principal investigator. And so again, with Select Switch, we now have 3 head-to-head studies comparing upadacitinib with 2 different biologics, adalimumab in Select Compare, also in Select Switch, and versus abatacept in Select Choice. Across these phase 3 trials, we know that upadacitinib has demonstrated consistent rates of disease control, including ACR response, DAS28 and CDI low disease activity and remission, and really consistent safety profile across data now up to 9.5 years. So how does the breadth of this data across Select Switch and these other RA Select studies kind of impact and color your overall treatment decisions?
Yeah, I think the data is critical, and saying that you have almost a decade there means something. And I think, again, keeping my theme of data speaks, we as rheumatologists are used to having fairly rare diseases. We're not cardiologists with 10,000 patient trials and so forth. And I think when you have programs that are building to the size like upadacitinib has, I think that data is impressive. I think it's nice to be able to share that data with patients so they can understand. So I think telling them patient numbers, trials, the breadth of programs is helpful.
I used to find myself being a steward. Like I thought I was a steward of drugs, right? Like I have a lifetime of RA I have to get the patient through. So I have to be like really a strong steward and really ration out the drugs.
Use your drugs wisely, right?
Yeah. And now I see it totally differently. I'm a steward of disease activity because it's those patients that, right, they go uncontrolled or undercontrolled for long swaths of time. Those are the patients I'm chasing my tail.
And now we're old enough, we see what happens, right? Yeah. And now you followed them for a long enough time that you believe the data. So I think we're getting close to our time here. I think overall, Select Switch as a study has really helped. It's a needed randomized controlled trial to really help with that clinical decision after the first TNF inhibitor failure in RA. What do we do, right? What data do we have to tell us what we can do and to share with our patients to help them decide what they want to do? Superior DAS28 CRP disease controlled, upadacitinib versus adalimumab after that first TNF failure and Select Switch. Certainly, we discuss factors to consider, primary versus secondary non-responders. We also, as you just mentioned, discussed the breadth of this upadacitinib clinical program and how that can help us talking about benefits and risks to our patients. And for me, this has been pretty productive. Did I miss anything, Dr. Jane?
No, I think you nailed it. It was fun, right? Last year, we got to kind of talk a little bit. Wow, there's a new study, and, you know, we'll...
It's coming, right?
It's coming. Now it's here, and I just... Listen, we have the data. I mean, that's what I just tell colleagues, like, we have the data.
Yeah.
We have the data, and so...
Yeah, I think sharing that, you know, I mean, it helps us.
All right, well, there's so much more we could discuss about this topic, but for now, that's the time we got. I want to thank you again for joining me today, Dr. Jane.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, all right, everybody who's listened to us this far, thank you so much. Again, there's this corresponding RX update on RenNow on the webpage to learn more about the details, the data from SelectSwitch. Really important for you to take a look at that. And also, you can continue listening. There's going to be some important safety considerations going over that black box warning, et cetera. And just thanks so much for being with us.
Upadacitinib important safety considerations and boxed warning. It is important to note that upadacitinib has a boxed warning for serious infections, mortality, malignancies, major adverse cardiovascular events, and thrombosis. Patients treated with upadacitinib are at increased risk for developing serious infections that may lead to hospitalization or death. Malignancies have been observed in upadacitinib-treated patients. In RA patients treated with another JAK inhibitor, a higher rate of lymphomas and lung cancers was observed when compared with TNF blockers. Non-melanoma skin cancers have also been reported. Periodic skin examinations are recommended in patients at increased risk, and patients should wear protective clothing and use sunscreen. Additionally, a higher rate of all-cause mortality, including sudden cardiovascular death, as well as major adverse cardiovascular events, pulmonary embolism, and venous and arterial thrombosis, were observed with another JAK inhibitor compared with TNF blockers in RA patients 50 years of age and older with at least one cardiovascular risk factor. Thromboses have also been observed in upadacitinib-treated patients. Avoid upadacitinib in patients at risk of thrombosis. Consider the individual patient's risks and benefits prior to initiating or continuing therapy. Please also read the additional upadacitinib safety information within the RX update corresponding to this podcast on roomnow.com regarding hypersensitivity reactions, other serious adverse reactions, avoiding live vaccines and the importance of immunizations, and medication residue in stool. The most common adverse reactions in RA greater than or equal to 1% were upper respiratory tract infections, herpes zoster, herpes simplex, bronchitis, nausea, cough, pyrexia, acne, and headache. Review upadacitinib full prescribing information for additional information at www.rxabv.com/pdf/rinvoq_pi.pdf or contacting AbbVie Medical Information at 1-800-633-9110. Adalimumab important safety considerations and boxed warning. It is important to note that adalimumab has a boxed warning for serious infections and malignancies. Patients treated with adalimumab are at increased risk of developing serious infections that may lead to hospitalization or death. These infections include active tuberculosis, TB, reactivation of latent TB, invasive fungal infections, and bacterial, viral, and other infections due to opportunistic pathogens. Most patients who developed these infections were taking adalimumab in combination with other immunosuppressants, such as methotrexate or corticosteroids. Lymphoma, including a rare type of T-cell lymphoma and other malignancies, some fatal, have been reported in patients treated with TNF blockers, including adalimumab. Please also read the additional adalimumab safety information within the RX update corresponding to this podcast on roomnow.com regarding anaphylaxis, hepatitis B virus reactivation, demyelinating disease, cytopenias, pancytopenia, heart failure, a lupus-like syndrome, autoimmune hepatitis, and avoiding live vaccines in patients taking adalimumab. The most common adverse reactions in clinical trials, greater than 10%, were infections, including upper respiratory and sinusitis, injection site reactions, headache, and rash. Review adalimumab full prescribing information for additional information at www.rxabv.com/pdf/humira_pi.pdf.